authors. I'm Joanne Morrell, children's and young adult fiction writer and author of Short Nonfiction for Authors. Thanks for joining me for the Hybrid Author Podcast, sharing interviews from industry professionals to help you forge a career as a hybrid author, both independently and traditionally publishing your books. You can get the show notes for each episode and sign up for your free author pass over at the Hybrid Author website to discover your writing process, get tips on how to publish productively, and get comfortable promoting your books at www.hybridauthor.com.au. Let's crack on with the episode. Authors, I hope you're all keeping well in whatever part of the world you reside and listen to the podcast in. Today's interview is with author and private income coach Stephen Selingut, and we chat his book Retirement Money Secrets and how it differs from traditional retirement planning guides, common misconception people hold about retirement planning, and how Steve's book aims to correct or clarify those misunderstandings. The role authorship has played in building his authority and reach within the financial education world, Steve's writing, publishing adventure, advice for authors, and much more. So in my author adventure this week, it's been a week of letting go. So many of you know that I started out writing in the children's and young adult fiction genre, and I was part of an organisation called Squibby, which is the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. That is a global organisation, and I volunteer my time towards the end doing the social media and also as newsletter editor. Prior to that, I was part of the Children's Book Council of Australia, and I also was the newsletter editor for about a year. So, you know, being part of a community, especially in the area, the field that you write in, is of interest to build up your knowledge, you know, make contacts, community, network, all these types of things. I wasn't successful in securing a traditional publication deal, which is what I was looking for this work, but I certainly made lifelong friends and have some amazing memories. Starting in the women's fiction side, I jumped ship and joined the Romance Writers of Australia, which is a huge organisation and one I definitely would like to continue and know more about. But immediately, you know, when I stepped away from the children's fiction last year after the writers' retreat, I put my hand up to be an events liaison for Perth. There's about three of us. And, I was supposed to be letting things go because my time, obviously everyone's time is precious, but my time is limited now in what I can do. And also, I feel like dedicating my time to community and organizations and things at this point, it's not serving me in what I need to do for myself at the moment. I have a community with this podcast, and this is what's serving me and what needs my attention. The liaison title for the Romance Writers was, I wasn't really doing the job justice. So I got in touch with them this week and said that I need to step down for now. And they were very supportive and it was all fine. I'm still a member of a lot of organizations. I just actively can't be part of committees and do that sort of thing. So I think, as well as if you've been listening to the podcast the last couple of weeks, I hired a couple of virtual assistants to help with social media and the admin side of this business. And already they've been worth their weight in gold. They are fantastic at what they do. And at first I was a little bit apprehensive about handing over jobs to them, and because I've been in control and I've been doing this as a solopreneur for the last 4 years, you know, longer even. But now that I have, and now I can see what they can do and the weight that's taken off me, I just feel like throwing everything at them and just stepping away. And I certainly don't. I'm not going to be going backwards in this business, only forwards. I can't continue to keep doing it myself. I don't want to go back to doing it all myself. It's just not feasible, and it's not there's no growth and all the rest of it. So you might look at things when you're letting them go as failures or what's not serving you. You need to make room for the new things that are going to serve you. Other aspects of the author adventure this week is daydreaming. I used to be a massive daydreamer in the past, and not living a fantasy land, but just daydreaming as part, and I think as part of being a creative as well, is thinking about things and wishing, I'm not going to say wishing upon a star, but, you know, places you want to visit, things I want to do, just creating things in my own mind for the fun of it, really. Taking myself out of this reality and just enjoying dreaming about certain things, whether they become a reality or not, whether I could afford to do them or I don't. It's just, I just think it was quite a playful, fun thing to get back into daydreaming this week. I've also sort of pulled myself up about getting bogged down in thinking about the future. At least once or twice a week, I am overextending my thoughts into way down the track in the future, because there is certain steps I need to take in my personal life, and also you think about professional steps as well, but it seems to be just this little mill I'm on each week, you know, and yeah, I almost have a little panic about it sometimes, like, what if this doesn't work out, or this is this, and it was just nice to say to myself, stop, you know, think of today, whatever day it is, and be here in the now. Don't think of the next day, don't think of next week, just focus on what needs done today, and you know, forget the future for a bit. And it removed a lot of the mental load I felt. And, you know, we can't always control what's going to happen. We can make decisions and choices and steer ourselves towards certain paths, which may or may not work out for us. But ultimately, our lives are mapped out for us in the way that fate, you know, brings it about. And that's my belief anyways. Your belief might be different, but definitely think about the things that are serving you in your author adventure and the things that aren't. And yeah, if you're like me, definitely make space for a little bit of daydream. How hybrid are you? This is a new little section of the podcast that I've spoken about. I wanted to include because this is the Hybrid Author Podcast. We want to talk about hybridness here. We want to embrace it. We want to understand it, and we want to further expand our knowledge on it and various things. So a hybrid career is about flexibility and adaptability. It's blending publishing methods, whether that be traditional, indie, small press, large press, your own press, revenue streams, books, services, speaking, creative outputs such as fiction, nonfiction, audio courses, collaboration. Being hybrid is a great way to expand your author income by diversifying your author business. There's so much to this career that you can mix and match for a better, more fruitful outcome. Have you given consideration to you and your products and how you can exceed their expandability? Do you want to try self-publishing if you're traditionally published, or vice versa if you're self-published? Have you any ideas that you think might work that to submit to traditional publishing houses? Or you can mix up formats. You might have a traditional print deal with one publisher, but they may not hold all the rights, and you could self-publish ebooks and audiobooks yourself. Or you could be traditionally published, say, in Australia, but the worldwide rights are your own, so you could self-publish in another. You know, the UK, the USA, sky's the limit. Just check your contracts and see what you can, you know, expand on. Have fun in being hybrid. Be creative. Dream. Plot. Plan. There's so much to be achieved, which all begins with your book. So this episode is sponsored by my imprint, Sanguine Press. Feel good, fast-paced, emotionally charged women's contemporary fiction. The writer, the hairdresser, and the nurse intertwines the struggles and dynamics of three women's working family and romantic relationships, leaning on their longtime friendship to help get them through. And my short nonfiction for authors, author fears and how to overcome them. How many times have you said your writing's crap or shied away from calling yourself an author? Take comfort in knowing your author fears are valid. Other writers feel the same way you do, but are not letting fear stop them from putting themselves out there. We're all feeling the fear, but doing what we love anyway, and you can too. And freelance writing, quick tips for fast success. Starting a freelance writing business? Place yourself in the pro position before you've met with your first client. Invest 1 hour gaining 60 plus quick tips to save yourself time, money, and stress, discovering the little but important factors previously unconsidered, having never worked directly with clients before. Books come in ebook, print, and some audio, and range from $10, $15 to $28 each. And you can buy direct from the hybridauthor.com.au/books website. Steve Selingat is the Amazon best-selling author of Retirement Money Secrets. He is an income independence coach with over 40 years experience in the financial industry. As a retired private investment portfolio manager, Steve managed over 300 different portfolios at a time before selling his business in 2023, with over 110 million under management. He has introduced several proprietary concepts, including the QDI plus PT, Smart Cash, the Investor's Creed, and Base Income. Further, he developed the Investment Grade Value Stock, IGVSI, Identification System. Today, Steve coaches individuals and other professionals in creating retirement income independence for both themselves and their clients. Welcome to the Hybrid Author Podcast, Steve.
Well, thank you, Joanne. It's nice to be with you.
We are honored, thrilled to have you. Can't wait just to dive in. So in amongst all your financial, you know, management success, how did you end up on the path as an author?
The first time it happened, actually, was my wife and I were on the outside of the Alaska, you know, the inland water area up in Alaska. And we were talking to some people at dinner, and we started talking about investing. And I guess when we got back that evening, she said, you know, you really ought to write a book on this stuff, what you do, because it seems to be so much different from what everybody else does. So I said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll try to do that. So I put together a little pamphlet. You look how old this is. It's all beaten up. Called A Millionaire's Secret Investment Strategy. It was only that thick. I mean, it was just under 100 pages.
Wow.
Just this little thing. So I put that together, and I went to a printer and got it printed up, and it was terrible. But it was my first effort, and some of my clients said it was good, and they gave it to, you know, they passed it along, because it wasn't, you couldn't go to a store and buy it. I had the whole supply, you know? Yeah. So that was the first thing. So it was just to maybe just explain what I did.
Yeah.
What I did. Then the next book was a little bit more important. My approach is, you might call it a little rebellious. I don't do it the Wall Street way. I take a different approach. It's income focused instead of market value focused. I don't buy and hold things. I trade them. I treat securities like they're my portfolios that I manage. They're like department stores where the securities are my merchandise. Yep. And I set a target price where I'll sell it, you know, and if you want it, you come in, you give me my price, you got it, baby, you know, and then I find another one that meets my quality. That's that QDI, my quality, diversification, income, and profit taking. And I judge profit taking by the amount of volatility of the stock. So again, it's a different approach. Wall Street pulls their hair out when we have a volatile environment. It makes me rub my hands together because I know I have opportunities to buy things cheaper. And the other side of the volatility is they go up, I have opportunities to take my profits. So it was a totally different approach. So the brainwashing book, which I have also could show you, but I don't need to, was the beginning of getting that message out there. And that one is actually on Amazon and was published. But this one, The Retirement Money Secret, which is this one here.
It's a lot thicker than the other one.
Oh, yeah. This is, you know, that's getting up there. And it's got a glossary of terms, and it's got, you know, it's a conversation, basically. It's written as a conversation between my wife and I and a couple we met on a cruise. This one was from Amsterdam, but, you know, it's more of a legacy thing at my age. You know, I've been doing this for 40 years. I've got ex-clients now because I sold my business 2 years ago, who have literally achieved income independence. They have more income coming in than they can spend, and it's growing every month for them. I teach people how to do that, and I think it creates a lot more happy folk out there than the idea of watching the stock market go up and down and getting all upset when we have a day like yesterday where the market was down 300 points, 600 points, whatever. People are going crazy. They're getting, oh, I'm so upset. I'm losing my 401k is going down. I'm not going to be able to retire. Back in the financial crisis, I had friends, you know, fraternity brothers of mine who I talked to, and they said they had to postpone their retirement for 2-3 years.
Absolutely.
Because they didn't have enough value that they could spend in retirement. It was crazy because it doesn't affect you. I mean, dividends and the income you're receiving on closed-end funds and stuff like that, they just keep coming in, and you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. So that's what the book is all about. Mm-hmm. This is an educational story of how you transition from this idea of market value being the most important thing to an understanding that the real issue is how much money you have to spend. And if you can grow that money, it becomes more, produces more income every year, you achieve this, what I call income independence. The tagline at the top of the book is market value fuels the ego, makes you feel good, you're happy, oh, I'm rich, I'm rich. And then it says, but income fuels the yacht.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I love that. That's fantastic. And it sounds like you've had quite a, it sounds like a hybrid approach, because you're not, you know, it's your own sort of teachings, it's your own concepts. And like you said, it's different from how other people are doing it, which is what we're all about on this podcast. You know, there's not just one way of doing things. So I can see how you said it's quite conversational as well. That sounds like it's quite different to what's out there, I would say, like the traditional retirement planning guides and things.
It's quite a bit different from.
What are some of the most common misconceptions you see people holding about, you know, retirement planning, and how does your book aim to correct or clarify those misgivings? Sorry.
The most common misconception they have is really one that's given to them. Most people, when they get close to retirement, they go to some kind of advisor to look at what I have, look at what I've accumulated. Is this enough to take care of my retirement plan? Most people think that it's a dollar amount measurement. And there is some truth in that, of course. But for most people, they believe that whatever they've accumulated, they're going to have to chip away at. They're going to have to spend parts of it each year. You know, they have a budget, let's say, of $2,000 or $5,000-$6,000 a month. You know, that may be low these days. Most portfolios that they've grown up with, their retirement programs. We have 401ks in the U.S. and they are totally market value orientated. They make no effort to produce income and so forth. So they're brought into this idea that I have to have $7-8 million in order to retire early, or four or five to retire at 65. When in fact, if they had income being generated, the expectation is that the normal person is going to spend about 4% of their assets each year. If the market goes up every year, that works. Right? Because you sell something. Most managers advise people to sell the ones that are down instead of the ones that are up, like I do, but that's another of the opposite things. What happens when you have a time like this where the market right now is at this relatively same level as it was last October, seven, almost 8 months ago? That period of time, there's been no growth. So the monies you've taken out of your account, you had to sell things at losses to get your 4% to pay your bills. And since they also make you reinvest all your dividends, if there are any dividends, so that there's no cash pool. So you have to sell things to get the money instead of having the cash available, having a reserve money like I do in my account. I have enough reserve to take care of all my expenses and my wife's expenses for the month. It's always there. You know, I don't invest it. So it's a totally different mindset. You have to start looking at income instead of market value. So that's their first misconception, that they have to have this huge sum of money. The type of investing I do generates income of around 10% a month. And that's without any profit taking. That's just with the base income that comes in from the securities within the portfolio, which are closed-end funds. And closed-end funds, actually a lot of financial advisors have misconceptions about closed-end funds. They don't understand them. And the thing about them is that they are designed to produce income instead of gains in market value. You know how if you listen to any business commentary, they're always excited. An up day is always good. A down day is always bad. Oh, this NVIDIA is going over the top. You got to go out and buy this. It's at an all-time high. And NVIDIA pays zero dividend. The only way you can make any money on NVIDIA is if you actually sell it. And people are so reluctant to take profits because, oh my God, I got to pay taxes. Instead, you take all that money and you put it into these closed-end funds, which also can own NVIDIA. Right. Inside, but they're paying you 10%. And their objective inside that fund, They're going to own NVIDIA. They're going to sell it and take the profits, and they're going to give you the money. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they work. So it's a totally different mindset to get to income. And that's the misconception, that the primary one, I've got to have this much in the bank, this much in my brokerage account, this much in my 401k, or I can't afford. Instead of saying, okay, I've got to start developing income in an outside my job, outside my employment, a separate stream of income that grows itself. And then by the time I get to retirement age, I'll already have not only the Social Security that I might get, but I've also got this income being produced by my own investments here. Yeah. So that's where I take people in the book. I get them to that point where they can have their own income sufficiency and so on, long before normal retirement age. When this is what I did myself, you know. When I first started investing, I said, hey, I'm working in Manhattan. I'm getting all dressed up. I got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, get all this suit on and tie, drive to the railroad station or to my bus stop, which I used most of the time, and get on this bus, go to Manhattan in the traffic, never know when I'm going to get home because of the weather and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not home until 7 o'clock at night, and it's just a crazy life.
Yeah.
And they're not paying me anything. So about it, in 1979, I was what, 34 years old. My investment portfolio was making 5 times the income that my job was.
Wow.
So I got my hand on it. Bye, guys. I'm leaving. And I said, I'm going to do this for other people. So that's what I've been doing ever since, telling people, hey, wake up. You don't need to grow the market value. It'll take care of itself. You just keep building income and reinvesting that income. You'll have plenty of market value, but you'll also have the income, and you'll be in a position where you don't really care which way the market goes. It doesn't matter anymore. And that's a nice position to be in.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's amazing.
Yeah, as soon as I learned that, I stopped losing my hair.
Well, you can afford to buy more now if you want.
If I wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Well,
as long as I can keep it tan. So shit.
No, that's amazing. I myself have just started looking at investments and things like that. I've just turned 40. And yeah, I don't know if that's too late to the game or if it's kind of different now. More kind of in the crypto side is of interest. So I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
Dabble in that area.
I wouldn't go there with a 10-foot pole. It's one thing that my book teaches is you really got to avoid speculations. There's no difference in crypto than there is going to Las Vegas.
Yep.
And just putting it on a roulette reel. Unless you are disciplined enough to buy it when it goes down and sell it when it goes back up, then you're not, it's not going to be the right path, because what you're going to need 25 years from now is an income. Mm-hmm. Crypto doesn't pay any income.
Yeah, yeah.
There are many different speculations out there that don't pay any income. The top stocks, the FANG stocks on the NASDAQ exchange in the U.S. I don't know if you guys use the same markets as we do or not. Mm-hmm. I know you can use closed-end funds because I have many associates and friends and people I've met in Australia, and I know you guys can use this stuff. And but you have to, the important thing is to get your mindset changed from one that looking at the market value of your assets. It's just like if you were in real estate.
Mm.
Let's say you had 5 different apartments spread out around Perth, all over the place. And you had some overhead. You have a mortgage on them. You have the plumbing. You have all the other types of maintenance. But they're paying you a nice chunk of money. They're paying your rent. So let's say for whatever reason, real estate values go down. It's not a big deal. The people aren't leaving. They're still paying their rent. Even in the financial crisis in the U.S., people didn't stop paying their mortgages.
No.
They kept paying their mortgages. So it's the same principle. Instead of having high maintenance real estate that's paying you this monthly income, You have no maintenance baskets of securities. You have a closed-end fund here that owns corporate bonds, all long-term, high-grade quality corporate bonds from the best companies in the world. And it's spitting out, you know, the equivalent of 10% a year to you every month, just like your tenants in your apartment complexes. It's that type of principle. You're setting up a cash flow. You're setting up an income stream that's going to pay you no matter what happens in the real estate market. You don't have to sell those apartments because they went down in price. That's what people do. That's what people did yesterday. Something ticked them off, or they heard this piece. They went out and sold securities.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
it's like
they
a panic,
were
they wanted,
exactly. You know, and I went out and I bought securities.
You know?
So it's, you know, because my income was still coming in. My income is not going to change just because the market goes down thousands of points. The income in general, none of those big companies stop paying their dividends or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, so it's just, you got to get away from the craziness of the daily market, watching the tape, listening to these guys who get on the TV and they're jumping up and down. You got to buy this when it's going up. You're going to make $1 million. Instead, give me somebody that's talking there and he's going to say, hey, you know, people, if you buy this type of security, it's going to be paying you 8, 9, 10% the equivalent of that on a monthly basis. Every month, you're going to be getting this stream of income coming in. You don't have to sit here and listen to me jumping up and down about how the market's going.
Yeah.
You just don't have to worry about it anymore. And that's what the book is all about. It tries to get you into that position where you can sit back on the deck of your yacht.
Yeah.
Because the money is coming in, you know, you can fill up the tank whenever you want. You can go from Cannes to Nice to Monaco and just live your life. After you've worked for 40 years building wealth, but now you have that wealth producing income for you.
Yeah, no, that's amazing and sounds exactly what I want, and probably for everybody listening as well. But with the book as a product, obviously you're so knowledgeable in the finance area and things like that. How have these books that you've produced, you know, sort of voiced you as an authority more in the industry? Has it worked to set you up that way? Because you already are, obviously, but maybe on
I pretty much my old client base of 150 families is probably still doing what I used to do for them, you know, with my old company. But I understand they're not totally doing it my way anymore. But I developed a growing community. It's been growing like at 80 to 100 new members every month since December.
Oh. Yep.
And these are people who have read the book, are implementing the strategy, or have used it. There's lots of people who had read my previous book and were using this strategy and now are in this community. So, you know, the word's getting out there, but I can't do that myself. I mean, I only know of two or three professional investment managers who are even using closed-end funds for their clients.
Right.
They don't. And there's a reason. And the reason for that is really very simple and very straightforward. When the industry changed, Charles Schwab changed the industry from one that was commission-based. You know, every time you bought and sold a stock, there was a commission. You know, every time you bought and sold a bond, there was a markup. There still is a markup on bonds and those types of securities. But financial advisors, instead of being commissions-based brokers, became fee-based financial managers. And the emphasis for the companies now, since everybody is fee-based in the company, is to grow the market value, because that's what the percentage is of. You get 1.3 or 1.5% of the market value. When I used to tell my clients, I said, the market's down, that's good news for you. Good news for you, because now the things I'm buying for you are at a lower price and they're paying a higher yield. And even better for you, since your market value is so low, you're paying me significantly less than you would be if the market was up.
Yeah.
So it's a double good news for you. But most businesses don't see it that way. So they're not going to invest in income-producing securities, because income-producing securities do not grow in market value
right.
the way stocks do. You're not going to have something go up 30 points in one day. You're not just not yeah. going to happen, you know, like in the stock market. Nobody's going to buy out your bonds. They're going to buy out that company, but they're not going to, you know what I mean? So it's just not exciting. It's not interesting. You don't have these high prices, and your advisor doesn't make enough money if he keeps you in an income program, unless he keeps you in that program for a long time, like right. I did. So my clients didn't care about their market values because their income was coming in. I was paying all their bills. We had maybe $500,000, $750,000 going out to people every month from their accounts without selling anything.
Yeah.
Without selling anything, just from the income they were producing. You know, that's the way I am now. My portfolios generate, you don't even want to hear the number.
Yeah.
Right? Put it this way. If anybody knows how much money you make when you manage $110 million, my investment portfolio pays me more a year right now than my assets under management ever did in fees.
And you've got a million yachts, not just one.
I don't even have one anymore. So I gave it to my niece about 5 years. It wasn't a yacht. It was a 20-foot speedboat.
Oh, wow.
And ski boat. And she lives where I used to live as a kid, up in Lake Opakong, New Jersey. And I know you, I don't know if you've ever been to the States or not, but New Jersey is right near New York City. And everybody thinks of it as the New Jersey Turnpike, goes up and down, and they never see the northwest corner of the state, which is mountainous and lakes, and green, farms, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's where my niece has my old boat that I had in South Carolina for about, I guess, the first 15 years I was here. And then I just got saltwater. Saltwater and boats don't really get along too well because you have to clean them every time you use them.
Yeah.
And it deteriorates the vinyl and the seats and things like that. And you have to replace your seats. And it just, it's difficult.
Yeah, no, I've got family in Utah and to like the bigger places and stuff. And I worked in Otis, Massachusetts for 3 months as a all-girl scout camp leader.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was probably about 20 years ago. So yeah, no, I love the States. I would love to go and visit South Carolina. Absolutely. It looks stunning. So no, that's
amazing. Nice. The beaches down by me are really incredible. Huge, very long and very wide, and truly.
Yeah.
And the tide is higher than you'd expect, but it's a nice place.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not short of a beach or two here. But
no, you probably have plenty, right?
Yeah, we do. So we're very blessed over here for that. So no, it's good. Well, going through the writing, publishing, and promoting of the book. Do you have any wisdom you want to share with going through these processes? So you did say your first book that you put out, you went and printed it yourself. So Retirement Money Secrets, did you use a hybrid publisher or how have you gone about publishing?
I used Amazon Kindle Publishing.
Print and demand.
I had an expert take care of it for me.
Nice.
You know, I hired a woman to do that. She was great. And she did the graphics. You know, there's a lot of graphics, you know, a lot of charts in the book that show how closed-end funds actually, since they're paying so much more than 4%, they actually beat the SPY over a course of years because the SPY doesn't pay practically anything.
Yep.
So the 4% is coming out of SPY, and we're building the income is 5 or 6% that's being added to ours each year, regardless of what the market's doing. You know, so those types of charts, she did them perfectly and highlighted them and, you know, everything that is that. It was written by a ghostwriter.
Oh, wow.
And this is something I would suggest to people because it takes your ego out of the thing. And like when I do my Q&As with groups, like yesterday, we did a discussion on business development corps, individual BDCs, and whether people should invest in them individually or in groups like they come available in CEFs and ETFs.
Yep.
And I gave them a lecture about the difference between speculating and investing, you know, the quality, diversification, income, those types of things. And it sounded like a lecture, you know, it sounded like I'm this college professor getting up there and telling my students about these things that they have to remember before they make the decision, that sounds good, buddy. I'm going to buy some of that, you know? And so that's what I did not want to do in secrets, in retirement money secrets, because that's what I pretty much had done in brainwashing. And I imagine I put a lot of people to sleep in that way. But this one with this ghostwriter who happened to be in her 60s and looking to retirement, not so far in her future, and looking at her assets and realizing that everything I was saying to her, you know, you're only making 2% on your money. Take a look. Talk to your advisor. How much am I making? And after he got done hemming and hawing, you look at the growth potential you have. You're only making 2%. Well, this guy here that I'm writing this book with is making his clients, and I still had clients at that time when I started writing it, 10 and 12%. Mm. And he's taking profits when they go up, and he's buying them when they go down. And it's a whole different security than you have. But no buts, pal. This is what I want you to do for me. And, you know, so she was asking all the questions any new person would. Mm. So when you get into this book, you put yourself in the place of the friends I met on the boat, on the cruise. And you are really asking the same questions that they are asking me, and I'm answering. So it's a conversation. Some of it's done on the golf course, you know. Some of it's done at a bar, you know.
That's really cool. Yeah.
So that's the type of instruction it is. And then sort of, you know, sometimes you get into more depth and more detail, but most of it all the way through the end is a Q&A session, a live Q&A session with members of my Facebook group.
Right. That's cool.
And we put it in the book, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a whole different approach. And apparently people grasp it quickly and are getting into it. And I have people now that when I went on vacation last month, I had people in this retirement money secrets investing community that I have.
Mm.
It's a whole separate platform. I had people who were, how could you say it? They were expert enough to actually complete my selection universes for me while I was away.
Wow, that's cool.
I have a guy today, this afternoon, who is running a Q&A within the community. He's running it he's developed some high-tech spreadsheets for people to use in managing their portfolios this way.
Yeah.
He's even modified or brought technology to the one spreadsheet that I use to manage my portfolios. I've been doing this for so many years. Yeah. I just watch, is my working capital growing every month?
Mm-hmm.
Is my income growing every month? And is my projected annual income growing every month? That's all I look at.
Yeah.
I don't look at anything. And he, of course, is new to this. And a lot of people are very tech-oriented. Mm. I'm not. I'm a fundamental guy, you know. Is it profitable? You know, does it pay the bills? Is it paying me money to invest in it? That's what I want to know. So he's doing this program himself for the community. Yeah. And I'm going to be there, you know, and I'm going to listen. And I'm never going to go into that depth because I don't need to because I've been doing it for so long. Fine, because some people need to do that. Some people need to have that technical stuff going on. So it's a community that's really alive and well, and people are participating, and everybody's got other things to offer, and they've all got their own stories to tell. This friend of mine has started a podcast. There's going to be a podcast where the members of this community are going to be on there discussing their transition from a market value-based approach to investing to an income-based approach to investing, tell their stories, tell people how they've achieved this income independence that I talk about. So the legacy is going to be there. And at my age, that's all you got.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, you got grandkids and you got that.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's fantastic. I think that all sounds amazing. And you must be, you know, bursting with pride to see what you've achieved, helping others achieve what, you know, you're teaching as well.
See me with a smile on my face most of the time. It's been a good life. It's been a good life. And I think I can help people do even better than I did because they can start it so much sooner.
Mm, that's it. And so is there another book on the cards or What are you thinking?
The only book I think is possible is a book that would include those stories. They had a book of 100 people giving these little stories, and maybe a couple thoughts and explanations about it, or just the stories. I think it could become
quite inspirational.
I don't know if it would sell as much as Secrets has, but who knows?
Yeah, that's a bit. Lastly, huge congrats to you on all your success and everything you've achieved. That's absolutely amazing. And thank you so much for joining us today. Our listeners, I'm sure, are dying to know where can they purchase, you know, Retirement Money Secrets and learn all about everything you do, you know, online, offline.
Yeah. Well, Retirement Money Secrets is available ebook, paperback, hard copy, and Audible from Amazon. The Audible is only available at Amazon. That was part of the deal I made on that. But all the other ones are available in other bookstores and other ebook sellers and so on.
Fantastic. And did you hire a narrator for the...
His name is Matt Spauer.
Yep.
And that book is just this far away from getting over the 1,000 mark.
Wow.
And in a nonfiction finance book, that's pretty unusual. Well, so is 7,000.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing.
In total for that book, you know, so it's gotten a lot of attention. I got an award this week. I got the American Legacy Book Award.
Oh, fantastic. Huge congrats. That's amazing.
In the business category, personal finance / investing.
Wow. Wow.
That just happened. So yeah, it's pretty happy.
That's some success. So no, huge congrats again. And thank you so much for sharing all you have. It's been fantastic talking to you.
Good. I enjoyed our conversation. It's amazing how they fly by, isn't it?
I know. I could talk to you all night, honestly, but I'll let you crack on with your day.
Okay. Well, thank you. And again, it's good talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Next time on the Hybrid Author Podcast, we have Rich Kozak on how to elevate your life and business to a higher level. Rich Kozak is the voice of impact-driven branding. After decades languaging and launching brands, he founded Rich Brands specifically to serve heart-centered entrepreneurs and professionals. At Rich Brands, Rich guides individuals in elevating their unique gifts so their brand makes higher-level impacts and increasing writing and publishing books to move their brand forward. The wisdom he shares is clarity for the impacts you will make and steps for the brand you will become. I wish you well in your author adventure this week. That's it for me. It's bye for now.
That's the end for now, authors. I hope you are further forward in your author adventure after listening, and I hope you'll listen next time. Remember to head on over to the Hybrid Author website at www.hybridauthor.com.au to get your free author pass. It's bye for now.